this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. We have a very special guest tonight, Mr. Joe Pistone. You know him as the FBI agent who is undercover, known as Donnie Brasco, infiltrating the mafia and bringing down some of these major criminal organizations. He's gotten further. He got further as an undercover FBI agent in organized crime than any person really in the history of operations inside the mafia.
And I got to say, those who Joe Pistone did not bring down as an FBI undercover agent are now in Congress. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. Surely I jest. Right? Now, it is our distinct pleasure to have with us FBI legend Joe Pistone and an icon of undercover work. It's an honor for us to be able to speak with him. Mr. Pistone, before the break, we were talking about a number of things, but the documentaries all talk about you, your work, your infiltration into the gang. And if you want to address some of that, go ahead right now because that's got to be, I mean, obviously it's fascinating. So many things happened to you during, you were 6 years undercover, right? And you took out like...
Yes, with that operation six, yeah.
My goodness. And if you want to discuss that a little bit, please, I'm sure our audience would love to hear it. I'm just not sure. I don't want to take you down any roads you don't want to go. So if you want to kind of narrate that.
Well, actually, you know, the premise of it was for me to, we had certain bars and restaurants targeted, and the idea was to visit these bars and restaurants and get known and hopefully get in conversation with some of the individuals that we were targeting, or with any individuals that were tied up or connected to the mob, and probably for the first 7 months, you know, I didn't have any conversations with anybody regarding any illegal activities, and then finally I had a breakthrough with a bartender at a place that I used to visit, and they were actually this bar restaurant was actually a Lucchese, and the Lucchese is one of the five families of mafia families in New York, and that's where these guys hung out. And I eventually broke the ice with this bartender and had conversations with him, and he finally started taking me out to after hours card and crap games, where he would eventually introduce me to individuals. And one individual that I met was a Colombo individual. And he was from Brooklyn, so he invited me out to come out to his club in Brooklyn. So I start going out there and hanging out with him and the Colombo guys. I did that for a few months, maybe 3 or 4 months, and then I got into an argument with two individuals that were in jail. They just got out of jail, and I got into an argument with them, and there are certain rules that the mafia has, and some will get you killed and some won't. Two of the rules that'll get you killed is that if you get into an argument with a mafia guy, now these are individuals that I'm talking about that have been officially inducted into a mafia family. So if you hear the word, if you hear wise guy, made guy, straightened out, good fellow, these terms are used for individuals that have been officially inducted into a particular mafia family. Now, another bit of information is that the mafia is not an equal opportunity employer. You have to be white, male, and Italian to be inducted into a mafia family. Individuals that are connected to the mafia family. That's what they're called. They're called connected guys. If they're white, male, and Italian, they're striving to be inducted into that particular mafia family. And how you do that is by showing your loyalty, by being a good earner. And what I mean by earner is bringing money into the family. I mean, it's all about money and respect, but mostly about money. And once you prove that that you're a good earner and you have respect for the family, then there's a process you go through to get inducted into the family. Well, these two and two of the rules that'll get you killed is if you get into an argument with a maid guy, if you insult him in front of other people, then he has the right to kill you, because, you know, that's one of the rules. You can't insult a maid guy in front of other people. The other rule is you can't physically get into a confrontation with a maid guy. Example, if you get into an oral argument with a maid guy, and you're not a maid guy, you're just an associate, and if he slaps you, he gives you a slap, and you hit him back, well, you're going to get killed. He has the right to kill you. So, you know, they're two pretty good rules to know for an undercover agent, is that you can't embarrass a maid guy, and you better not hit a maid guy back. And what you have to remember, and you know, this goes back to picking the right people to work undercover, as far as that mental toughness that I discussed earlier, is you have to realize that if you infiltrate an organized crime group that is violent, you at some point in time are going to get into arguments with individuals in that group, because on the street in these groups there's a lot of envy and jealousy. And why is somebody envious of you or jealous of you? Well, they may think you're making more money than they are. They may think you're closer to the boss than they are. So there's always this infighting going on as far as people being jealous of the next guy or envious of the next guy. And just so happens I got into an argument with these two guys, and after the and one of them was a maid guy, and after the argument I knew that that it could never be repaired, and not to get into it, because it became physical. It actually was a physical confrontation that I got into.
Was this Joe, was this that meeting that was called, that was where you were like grilled for upwards of 5 hours?
They had me in the back room grilling me for like 5 hours. And they had their gun on, you know, they had a gun on a table, and basically it was, you know, if you don't convince us that you know, that you're a real good jewel thief, and you're not a, you know, you're not somebody that you don't say you are, that you're not going, you know, you're going out of this room rolled up in that rug, you know. So that if I didn't convince them, you know, chances are, I mean, not chances, that, you know, they were going to kill me. And that, you know, that was about a 5 hour confrontation. And the problem is, in these situations, is that once it's over, you know, you got to maintain your respect and credibility, so you can't, you know, if you just say, hey, look, you know, I understand that your situation, and, you know, let bygones be bygones. Well, then what that does is it's a red flag. There's something wrong, you know, because you got to be mad that somebody's calling you out.
Sure.
And the only thing they understand here is, you know, is an oral and also a physical confrontation. And I, you know, I was fortunate that one of the guys wasn't, you know, one of the guys was a connected guy. So, you know, I had to get physical with him. So, you know, we had a kind of a three-way scuffle.
You couldn't hit the maid. Yeah, you couldn't hit the maid guy, right?
So I'm whooping on the other guy, but the maid guy's hitting me, and I can't do anything because if I hit him, then I'm done for. But I had to do this to maintain my credibility and respect. Because if I didn't go that way, then, you know, chances are they would have killed me right there anyway. So, but after that, I knew that I had to get away, and, cause I, you know, this couldn't be repaired. So, but I had met a wise guy, a banana wise guy by the name of Tony Mira, during these after hours joints that I would take. And so I went down and I just started hanging around down a little bit and started hanging out with him. He went to jail. He actually was out. He was in for drug dealing, and then they remanded him. They put him back because he broke his probation, so they put him back in. And I became friends with an individual of Lefty Ruggiero, Benny Ruggiero, who was also a banana. So I started hanging out with him, and he introduced me, you know, to individuals in the family, his captain. You know, the mafia is pretty much like the military or a police organization. They're very structured. You know, they have a boss, they have an underboss, they have a consigliere, and then they have individuals that they call captains. And these individuals are all appointed by the boss. And then each captain has so many soldiers and associates under them. And that's called a crew. And that's how they earn, you know, that's how they earn all their illegal money that way. The guys under the captain. So I start hanging out down a little bit. He started hanging out with Ruggiero. He introduced me to, again, at the time, the boss was Carmine Galenti, and then the other boss was a guy named Nicky Marangello, and his captain, Lefty's captain, was a guy by the name of Mike Sabella. And so I became associated with them, and became pretty well liked, pretty well respected. We were, you know, with Lefty, I was involved in bookmaking and gambling operations. And then what happened was, like I said, I was in pretty tight with, you know, they trusted me, and the FBI had an undercover operation going out in Milwaukee. And they really weren't going anywhere. They had a good business going, and so they asked me if I could, any chance of bringing the Bananos out there. The boss of Milwaukee at the time was Frank Balestrieri, and he was associated with Chicago because Chicago ran all that territory out there, but he had his own family and he was a boss. So I said, let me see. So I met with the undercover who I had known. I had done other undercover jobs with him before. And we come up with a plan that we had known each other and, you know, how he contacted me, et cetera, et cetera. And I was to, you know, pass this on to Ruggiero and see if he would bite. Well, it took about 2 or 3 weeks before he finally got interested in some guy that I knew out in Milwaukee. And he got interested when I told him the guy had a whole business going and he had money, and that's when he got interested. But see, the thing with the mafia is that you can't move into another mafia family's territory. You have to get their permission. And the whole country's cut up. Even New York, all the families in New York have certain sections of all the boroughs that they can conduct illegal business in. And a family from
so
New
how,
York.
So
were
highly structured, highly organized, highly structured.
Very high. That's why they were in. You know, they've been operating for so many years. Is they're very, very structured, and you know, each family has its own boss, but then there's a commission made up of the bosses in New York and maybe a couple other bosses around the country who set the rules for the mafia as a whole. And back in the day, you know, in the late 40s or whatever, they cut up the country. And you know, the Chicago mob had the Midwest and the Kansas City, they had down, you know, in Kansas City. So they very structured that way. And as I said, one family cannot move into another family's designated territory without the permission of that family. And then the family whose territory it is, they dictate how much the family can, you know, when I say invaded family, they don't really invade. They come in, and, you know, I mean, with their permission. But they have to get a cut of everything. So, and you have to go through a process of sitting down with them and discussing, you know, why you want to go into their territory, what kind of illegal activities you want to conduct there, and why you want to do it. So the whole process of getting a meeting and what they call a sit down, it's just a meeting with the Bonanos and Milwaukee. That probably took about a month because Bonanos have to call. The way it worked, the Bonanos had to call Chicago, explain everything to them, why they wanted to go to Milwaukee. Then Milwaukee calls. I mean, that Chicago calls Milwaukee, explains, you know, that the Bonanos want to come out there and have a sit down, and this is the reason. And then Milwaukee could say yes, or Milwaukee can say no. If they say no, then it's a dead issue. They said yes, so me and Lefty have to fly to Milwaukee, and we have a sit down with the boss and his administration. And we have to explain to them, you know, that Tony, the undercover agent, it has been associated with the Bonanno family for 10 years. He's out here now, and, you know, he's got this business going, and he wants to become involved in it. And with their permission, you know, we'd like to be involved in it. They eventually say yes, you know, but they have to get a piece of it. So now, what did we just do? We just married two mafia families to conduct business. Never happened before, right?
That's amazing. Exactly.
We married two mafia families to go in business together. Now, not that they don't, but when I say, you know, when I say us, I'm talking about, you know, the FBI, you know, our undercover operation.
So, and that's no small feat. I just want to reiterate the fact that,
well, it's not, and because there's a whole lot more to it than, you know, than I have time to explain here.
Sure.
Because it takes a long time. These sit downs are, you know, very tense, you know, at the sit downs, because you can't make a mistake. So we had that going, and now I'm back in New York, and, you know, and back in, you know, when I'm back in New York, I'm, you know, I'm meeting with through Lefty. I'm meeting all wise guys from other families, you know, because they're doing business with them. So he's introducing me to, you know, to wise guys from the Columbos, from the Gambinos. And then what happens is, they by the name of Carmine Galante. Well, Carmine Galante controlled all the importation of heroin into the United States from coming out of Italy and Sicily.
He
controlled everything, and he was kind of a greedy guy in that he wasn't sharing this with anybody, and particularly with the other mob families. And he, you know, he got a little too big for his britches, basically. So they killed him. They got permission from the commission to kill him, with the promise that that the Bananos would share this drug importation with the other families. So after they killed him, they appointed a boss. He was named Rusty Restelli, who at a prior time was the underboss of the family. But he was in jail at the time. But he still was appointed boss. Since Mike Sabella, if you remember, I mentioned Mike Sabella, who was the captain that me and Lefty were under, he was close to Galante, so they knocked him down. They just made him, knocked him back to soldier. I mean, it may be hard, you know, for your audience to follow, because there's so much infighting and scheming, you know, that goes on. But they go to Mike and they say, look, you know, you either step down, give up your captainship, or we're going to kill you. Or you're going to go with, you know, as Galante went. But so Mike steps down, and Nicky Marangella, they tell him the same thing. So he steps down as underboss. And again, they appoint, you know, Russ Ustelli as the boss. Then there was an individual out in Brooklyn, and his name was Sonny Black Napolitano, who they made a captain because he was instrumental in the hit, in setting up the hit on Galante and getting permission from the commission and actually Paulie Castellano, who was the head of the Gambino family, and getting because you got to get permission to hit a boss. I mean, you just can't go do it. So they made him a captain, but he was in Brooklyn. So they put me and Lefty under Sonny Black. So now, instead of, you know, reporting to Little Italy, we have to report out every day to Sonny Black in Brooklyn. And that's another thing. Whoever your captain is, you have to check in with him every day and report in, you know, every day to the social club that they have. You have to maintain contact. You just can't, you know, not be seen for, you know, for a few days or a week.
There's some accountability there. I mean, obviously.
Yeah, there's big accountability. And you hit it on the head. They're very, very structured. You know, it's a very structured organization. So we're, you know, now with Sonny Black, you know, in Brooklyn again, still involved in gambling. Now, you know, he spreads out into drugs, you know, bringing drugs up from not only from out of the country, but up from Florida, et cetera, you know, gambling, extortion. I mean, they're into everything. There's nothing that they're not into. Now, again, the FBI has another operation going out of Tampa, Florida, and it's a nightclub. And basically the same thing. They got a good thing going, but they're not getting to. And at the time, the boss of Florida was an individual by the name of Santo Tropicani. And he was an old time.
Yep.
He was an old time boss.
Yep.
So, you know, we the same thing. Do I think I can bring my Bananos down to Florida? Well, you know, it was. I said, well, let me see. So I go through the same thing now, and we have to go through the same same ritual. I have to sit down with Sonny Black, you know, and Lefty, and we used to go to Miami a lot. And what I did was, you know, the deal with the undercover was, look, you know, we're going to be in Miami. Come down to Miami and you bump into me and, you know, we'll be in this, this hotel and we'll be in the bar. You bump into me and, we take it from there. You know, we haven't seen each other in years, blah, blah, blah. And what are you doing now? Well, I got a, you know, I got a club up in Tampa. Why don't you guys come up? So that's how that worked.
And just if I can interject something here, because
yeah.
Just to be clear, here you are, FBI agent undercover Joe Pistone, as Donnie Brasco. And for those of you with those listeners remembering the movie Donnie Brasco, we'd be talking about Johnny Depp working with Al Pacino, Lefty. Al Pacino portrayed Lefty, and you're traveling all over the country. But here's what I find fascinating, and I think what people really need to understand is you're setting up these, you're coordinating these meetings, these business operations, but that's only half the job. The other half the job is to funnel that information back to the FBI, where they're, imagine like a big corkboard, where they're connecting the post-its with the yarn, you know. So that's, it's amazing. So you're working double duty, I guess, is what.
Yeah,
I'm
exactly. You know, and you know what you have to understand, you know, the audience is that, and like I said, you got to forget what you see on television about undercover operations and an undercover. You know, an undercover is walking a fine line because you have basically three people. I like to say, you know, three mistresses that you have to satisfy. Number one, you got to satisfy your organization that you're doing what you're supposed to be doing on this undercover job. Then you got to be satisfying the bad guys. Then you got to be satisfying your home life. You know, with your wife, or if it's a female undercover, your husband or your boyfriend or girlfriend, whatever. You know, so you got three people that you have to make happy,
and that's no small task.
And it's not easy, and especially with the especially with the bad guys, because you know they want everything now. And remember, I said there's a lot of envy and jealousy. So I'm real close to Sonny Black. Now, Lefty's my guy, but he's jealous because Sonny Black has taken such a liking to me. You see what I mean?
Okay. Yeah.
So even though Sonny's our boss, you know, I've known Lefty way longer than I've known Sonny. And like I say, Sonny Black took a real liking to me.
Mm-hmm.
So Lefty gets jealous. So it you know. But at any rate, so we do the same thing. You know, we set up a meeting. And here's another thing too. You normally don't get to meet a boss. You don't get to sit down with a boss. But it setting up the Milwaukee deal, had dinner with the boss, with Lefty. Had dinner at his house. I mean, to go to a boss's house for dinner, I mean, it's like, you know, if you know the mob, it doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. So finally, through, you know, another few weeks, we get a meeting with Trafficante, and me and Sonny Black sit down and have a meeting with Trafficante, and Sonny tells him that, you know, one of our guys, again, you know, is in Tampa. He has an after hours place, a nightclub, and we like to start, you know, doing gambling out of the a nightclub, and so after a few meetings, Traffic Candy gives us his blessing, and we just married another family to the Bananas.
My goodness, you're making friends all over the place, all over the country.
Yeah, you know.
All right. Now, if I can ask you something here that's kind of a little off, but maybe at the periphery. In all of this, I know your base of operation, as you said, is in New York, and
right.
then you expanded to Chicago, Milwaukee, and then down to Florida. A lot of people are going to want to know this, and I certainly do as well. With your operation, your undercover work, were you bumping into a lot of politicians, a lot of powerful, influential people in politics? Was that going on back then?
Well, let me say this. During my time, the mob was paying off. We were paying a detective to get us reports on unorganized crime. We were paying off an undersheriff to keep us abreast of what was going on. They had some judges in their pockets. They had politicians that were friendly toward them. Now, I never met any of the politicians. I never met any of the judges. But I knew I knew the people in law enforcement that were getting paid off.
Okay, one follow-up question to that, if you don't mind, and then we can get back. The follow-up question I have is for a judge to be paid off. Is there something more than money, or is it just pure money, or is there a compromise involved?
Well, basically, you know what it is. Basically, they catch them. Look. Even though they're judges, they're human, right? So,
yep.
They might have a drug habit. They might have a gambling habit. They might like women.
Mm-hmm.
So they set them up, basically. You know,
and
if they know they have a gambling habit, they keep losing. They let them keep betting until they owe so much money, you know,
yep.
that they could never get out. So they start, doing what they ask them to do. If they like women, they'll put women on them. If they have a drug habit, they'll supply them to drugs. I mean, there's just so many ways to catch them because look, they're some of them got the same weaknesses of everybody else.
Certainly, but it's interesting
to hear you say
that.
Once they got them, then they work them to fix cases or whatever they do.
Amazing, but again, you having lived this as
but now let me say this. Let
Go
me
ahead.
Say this.
Sure.
Since the last several years, since we really broke their backs, to bring them down to where they're just another organized crime group, they've lost that wherewithal, to control. To really control judges or politicians or people in law enforcement. The younger guys just don't have the wherewithal to do that. Now, does that mean that there aren't some? No, it means it's not like it used to be.
Got
it. It's not like it used to be.
Okay. Well, then that's good to know. And it's not like it used to be because of your efforts.
Because of all the FBI and law enforcement, we showed that they weren't, that they could be penetrated, that it was an organization that you couldn't knock off the pedestal, And once we showed that, then start going after them. I mean, we put every major boss in jail throughout the country. And it got to be where nobody wanted to be the boss. So
for fear of getting caught in the
because they know they're right, because that, then we start targeting the bosses, you know, instead of just the the soldiers. So we started going out, you know, because the bosses were always so insulated.
Sure.
And then we found, you know, we found ways to break through that insulation and put them all in jail.
Okay.
So
wow. So again, 6 years, folks. Our guest, Joe Pistone. You'll know him as, you may know him as Donnie Brasco. This is the real Donnie Brasco, Joe Pistone. Really a feature of Donnie Brasco, the movie. His book, many books actually, but his books, including, Donnie Brasco, My Undercover Life in the Mafia, a true story by FBI agent Joseph D. Pistone, and other books. Visit his Amazon page. Joe, do you have any other web presence aside from your Amazon page or any place else?
No, I don't.
Okay, all right.
I'm not big on social media.
Gee,
you know,
me neither.
There's just too much out there, man. I mean, God, you know. I don't like people to know every time I walk out my front door.
Yeah, it's amazing, yet so many people do, right? It's, I don't know.
Yeah.
We only have about 20 minutes left, and this is such a fascinating, to me, it's a fascinating subject, and you're a fascinating man, given your history. As we wrap up your time in the FBI here, or doing what you did with the operation, well, Operation Donnie Brasco, I'd kind of want to, if you don't mind, at some point before the end of the episode here, I'd like to get your take on the current environment. You know, you had mentioned earlier about leaks and stuff. I don't know if you're opposed to talk about what's taking place with the FBI currently, but just, you know, just your feelings about that. But we can, if it's all right with you, we can hit that after. We can complete your story here. But, okay, so, are you, by the way, are you still testifying in trials? I mean,
No, I'm not.
Okay.
I testified, I think I had in about 22 trials, and that was enough.
My goodness,
you know,
yes.
No, I stopped testifying a couple years ago.
Okay. But I mean, the trials from they lasted during that operation 20 plus years, right? I mean, it was incredible.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I testified up until, I guess it was 99 or maybe 2000.
Wow.
In different trials.
That. Okay. Our inbox or our social or our studio email is just blowing up here from people. So many questions who have seen.
Do you do
the movie.
A question?
Yeah, I mean, let me ask you this. This from Karen, and she's listening live, believe it or not, out of London, UK, wanting to know.
No kidding.
Spent a lot of time there. Oh, really?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
What was your? She wants to know. I'm just going to encapsulate the question here. She wants to know what's your most fearful moment that you know you thought perhaps you might be killed or taken out.
Well, the time we were in that locked room for 5 hours with the gun on the table.
Yeah.
And telling me if I didn't satisfy their answers, I was going to get rolled up in a rug and take it out in a rug. And, you know, it's funny, things that you think of, and the first thing came to my mind, I hope it's a Persian rug.
Okay.
You're gonna go out, you might as well go out on a $50,000 rug, right?
That's one way.
That was one of them. I mean, there were several others, but that basically was because I was boxed in, and you know, just in a little room, you know, with bars on the windows, and there was no way out.
Mike, okay.
But that probably was right. the one that I was more concerned about.
Well, yeah, and yeah, I don't blame you there. Now this from Robert, listening from Kansas City, wanting to know if there was anything within your investigation during that period of time as Donnie Brasco, anything that you learned that kind of came out of left field, this that you weren't expecting, or you know, some huge revelation that, my goodness.
I always knew about the mafia because I grew up in a, you know, in that environment, as far as neighborhood where, you know, where mob guys were, and I knew mob guys. I went to high school with a couple guys whose fathers were pretty big time gangsters, and you always know, you know, that they're into illegal activities. You know they're into gambling. You know they're into, you know, swag, which is stolen property. You know. Clothing and stuff, but you never get, you know, even though you're in a neighborhood, you never really get to really know the individuals. And the thing during my operation is that when these guys get ordered to kill somebody, you know, they have to do it. It could be your brother. It could be, you know, your cousin. I mean, I knew guys that killed their son-in-laws, guys that killed their uncles because they were ordered to do it. And you don't, you know, you don't back off, because if you do, then you're going to get killed. And in the mafia, unlike in the movies, you know, there's no negotiating contract. You get the contract to kill somebody. It's your responsibility. And then once after they kill them, it's like the guy was never there. That, you know, they never mention their name again.
Wow.
And that's what's the most enlightening thing. Like I say, you know, growing up in a neighborhood, you know about the gambling, you know about the, you know, the hijackings, but you don't know about the murders, you know, because they once a guy's gone, he's gone, and that's it.
Okay. Another question from Roger from Brooklyn, wanting to know, did you take part in or have any knowledge of the Lufthansa heist in 1978? That was one of the biggest.
No, I had no. That was a different family.
Okay.
Bananas had no part of it, and the Plumbos had no part of that. No.
Okay. All right. And then we got a lot of questions about an approximate number of people that you actually were responsible for bringing to justice. And I've heard numbers of around, 200 people?
Yeah, well, the closest I can figure out, all the trials, it was 235 individuals. And most of these, almost all of them were, you know, known individuals. What I mean by that, they weren't just, you know, the lowest kind of totem pole. Most of these were mid-level up in the different mafia families.
Okay. All right. That's an amazing number for what you, I mean, so what you've done to clean up our country. This from Helen, and I believe this would be Miami. Yeah, I from Miami, wanting to know, were drugs a big part of the mafia operation? And she writes down about, she was writing about, a lot of television shows and such say that the mafia, kind of shunned from the drug operations, but in your experience, that wasn't the case.
No, it wasn't the case. Drugs was a big money maker for the mafia. Now the difference is that the big money on the drugs is from the, you know, the importation and the distribution. In kilo size and not street sales. Now, the mafia didn't get involved in the street sales. You know, they would get involved in the kilo sales to individuals who then you know, did the street sales. But drugs was a big part of the income. Yeah, very big part.
Okay. All right, very good. Another question from John Jay, listening live from British Columbia. Let me see. Well, let me water this question down a tad here. Okay, well, in your experience, is the what is known as the mafia, or what has what people would recognize as being the mafia, is it still in existence today? Is the infrastructure still there?
Yeah, the mafia is still in existence. The structure's still there, but it's not as strong as it was, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, simply because, as I mentioned, we put all the bosses in jail, you know, who were the core. The individuals today, they're so far removed from the heritage, you know. And also, what has been a big blow to the mafia is what they made money from also hurt them, because the younger guys started using it. Where, you know, the old timers or the guys of, you know, when I was in or a few years after, it was strictly a money maker for them. They didn't use it, but then the young guys start using it. And the young guys, you know, again, with the big push and attack on the mafia, where we put all the, you know, the major individuals in jail, they lost their control of the unions. I mean, you know, they might have a union here or there, but they don't control any of the major unions anymore. And, you know, they don't control law enforcement and politicians like they did, because the younger guys just don't have the wherewithal to cultivate these people. So basically what it's down to, it's a criminal organization that at one point in time, when they controlled basically the country, they don't control the country anymore. And where other organized crime groups, such as the Russians, the Albanians, the Colombians, were afraid of them, they're not afraid of the mafia anymore.
Interesting.
At one point in time, they all had to make deals with the mafia to operate. Well, not anymore. They pretty much do what they want to do.
Interesting. And we have so many questions about current events. Your perception, given the fact of your incredible history with the FBI, your incredible history as a law enforcement officer, undercover agent, many people are sending us questions and wanting to know what. And again, I'm going to leave it up to your, you know, what you feel comfortable talking about, but what you see taking place now, outside of the documentaries you've done, here you are. What do you see? You mentioned the leaks earlier. I certainly want to make sure that we get this in. The FBI, the leaks, the investigations. We saw Comey on television on the Senate subcommittee hearings testifying. Any thoughts you want to share on what's about the FBI as an organization unofficially from Joe Pistone?
It's a different time, but look, we never commented on ongoing investigations, and it didn't matter who asked us. You know, you found out about the investigation when it was time to go to court. And that's one of the, you know, that's one of the negatives I see, you know, commenting on investigations. And, you know, I can comment that we're conducting, that there's an investigation going on, but, you know, that's all well. You know, I can't make any further comment. Well, that's enough, you know. We're investigating somebody. We never did that. It was strictly between the FBI and the U.S. Attorney's Office, and that was it. I don't think law enforcement needs to, you know, needs to be so politically correct that they give away, you know, all their investigative techniques or who they're investigating at any particular time. I mean, it's hard enough conducting an investigation without, you know, without tipping in individuals or without leaks coming out of wherever they're coming out of. I mean, I don't know where the leaks are coming, but I mean, in your lifetime, you ever see transcripts of somebody's conversation in the newspapers a week later? I mean, it's like crazy.
All right? You're exactly right. And thanks for pointing that out. As a law enforcement officer, in your capacity and well recognized and decorated, to me, that's the crime. If anything,
yeah, and I mean, I don't get it. You know, it's a felony, and I don't see they may be doing a lot of behind the scenes investigation, but you know, I heard a commentator say yesterday or today, and the FBI found Tom Brady's jersey, football jersey, in Mexico, but they can't find out who's committing all these leaks.
I heard the same thing.
I mean, I'm not laughing, but I thought that was kind of a funny comment, you know.
Yeah, funny and not so funny.
You know what I mean?
Way.
I mean, not funny, yeah. But you get the gist of it, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. You're telling me, yeah, you can find Brady's jersey, but you can't plug it or find out who's leaking.
I'm sure they're, you know, I know they're on it, you know, but in certain leaks, there's only certain people that have knowledge of certain conversations, you know, and you start there and then you narrow it down. And it's not like, you know, 1,000 people have knowledge of certain conversations, right? I mean, there may be, right, you know, a handful of people.
Right.
And you go from there. And so, I mean, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
I know how I would conduct the investigation, but I nobody's asking me.
Well, I'll tell you something. I would put your name in the hat there to be asked because of your experience, because of your dedication, and I'll tell you something, again, a legend, a man I respect because of the dedication and because of the justice you brought to so many people on behalf of the United States.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
We only have about 2 minutes left, if you can believe this.
Okay.
Is there anything that we haven't covered? You're speaking to a pretty wide audience.
Just that I was due to get inducted into the Bonanno crime family. I was proposed for membership into the family. I was due to get inducted, but what happened was there was a rift within the family. Three captains were trying to take over the family. They weren't aligned with Rusty Rastelli, and the individuals that I was aligned with ended up killing these three individuals. So there was kind of a war going on now, a shooting war within the Bonanno family. I was due to get inducted into the family and become an official member of the Bonanno family in December, but due to this war that had started in May, the FBI ended the operation July 28th, so I never did get officially inducted into the Bonanno family. But I was the first law enforcement officer that was FBI agent or anybody that was proposed and accepted for membership into a mafia family.
Man, I don't even know what to say to that, except, you know, my go-to word is wow, and that's sufficient as far as I'm concerned. Wow, again, you're a legend, that in every sense of the word.
Tell that to my wife and kids, you know, when my wife tells me to take the garbage out, you know. Say, yeah, hey, you're talking to a legend.
Well, with everything you've seen, I got to tell you, everything you've seen. And isn't that true, though? You know, you're out there. We're all out there cleaning up the poop after the dog. And
exactly.
You know,
legend or no legend.
There you
go. Florida's needs some scrubbing, you know.
I hear you, my brother.
Mr. Pistone, it's all good.
Great.
Hey, you know what?
What
I did feel about that, if anybody gets the Escape Channel, I don't know. At 10 o'clock on Wednesday evenings, I got a TV show on there called Deep Undercover.
Okay.
It's on Wednesday at 10 p.m. on the Escape Channel, Deep Undercover. And basically what it is, it's an hour show, and we feature real live undercover operations that have taken place. And, you know, they've all been adjudicated, and we feature the undercover agent and do a little reenactment of his or her case.
We will promote the heck out of that, and I'm going to look that up. Escape Channel, 10 o'clock, Wednesday, you said?
Wednesday,
Deep Undercover.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. We'll promote the heck out of it and provide a link in our program description. Mr. Pistone, you've been so gracious with your time. Thank you very much.
I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you.
All right, my brother. You take care. God bless.
All right, you too. God bless.
Ciao. All right. Bye-bye. That was Joe Pistone, also known as Donnie Brasco. Folks, we're going to be back. Stay right where you're at.
Just what kind of thriller predicts the future? In 3 days in the Belly of the Beast, Daniel Holdings wrote about the God Particle before CERN actually discovered the God Particle. In As the Darkness Falls, Daniel wrote about an Islamist terrorist confederacy that rose up out of Syria and declared a caliphate 3 years before ISIS was ever heard of. In his newest novel, Between the Veil, Daniel talks about a space between dimensions where supernatural beings can walk. He says that these novels are a warning from the Creator to his creation. Will war come to America? Will the world's economies collapse? Are we looking at increased earthquakes and volcanic activity? Will the United States fall into civil war? You can find all of Daniel's work at his website, danielholdings.com. That's danielholdings.com. All of these things and more are talked about in Daniel's books. To find out what's coming next, go to danielholdings.com.
Worldwide demand is making coconuts one of the highest yielding cash crops available today. Coca-Cola, Pepsi, and many high net worth individuals have invested billions of dollars into coconuts for strong growth and solid long-term income. Yields could be as high as 18% or more per year. Capital appreciation and exceptional income for up to 60 long years would be an absolutely brilliant investment to pass on to future generations. Diversify wisely with direct ownership of fully managed coconuts on prime farmland close to the beautiful Costa Rican border. For more information, qualified accredited investors should go to profitsincoconuts.com or phone 855-888-6288. That's 855-888-6288. This announcement does not constitute an offer to sell securities or a solicitation of an offer to purchase. Offer made by prospectus only. 855-888-6288 or visit profitsincoconuts.com. Profitsincoconuts.com.
You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes a secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in this community and beyond. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.